One of the most. Thank you, Katie.
Sorry,
oh,
that.
That's all right.
Okay, I feel so flat right now.
I do
okay.
Like call Nancy Bragg.
We'll get Commissioner Fish and Saltzman
when
back.
I was raising money, and I called to Hester for money. She said, "I can't talk to you right now. We're going to have people coming over, and I'm in a complete flap doodle."
Flap doodle?
Okay, council will come to order, please. That's the danger of taking a break, but we do need to get back to work here, all of us, so we'll call the council back to order. I know our colleagues will be coming back in momentarily, and we'll allow our auditor and our IPR director to start the presentation. Would you read the item, please, Carla?
Item 1020, authorized city auditor, independent police review division, to directly question Portland Police Bureau employees, change police review board public reporting requirements, and other police accountability reforms.
Thank you. Auditor Griffin-Vallade.
Good afternoon. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, Portland City Auditor. Nice to be here before you, Mayor Hales and council members. I'm here to introduce Constantine Severe, Director of the Independent Police Review Division in my office. Constantine will take us through the major police accountability reforms before you, which are essentially focused on four areas. Code changes to strengthen IPR's oversight authority. Number two is expansion of CRC to 11 members and having CRC members serve on a rotating pool of community members on the police review board. Three, changes to the post-investigative portion of the police review board code. And four, policy changes that reflect national best practices. These are the most significant set of reforms since those we brought before you before council in March 2010. In large measure, they reflect the police accountability portion of the city's agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice. IPR and the city attorney's office began drafting these reforms nearly a year ago to meet the requirements of the city's agreement with DOJ. And as you know, implementation of the DOJ agreement has been delayed, but we fully expect those matters to be resolved in the near future. Passage of code changes now will give us a head start on implementation of the DOJ agreement and institute additional reforms. So after Constantine walks us through the proposed changes, we would like to call up an invited panel of guests, Michael Alexander, Director of the Urban League of Portland, Jan Friedman, Director of Disability Rights Oregon, and Casey Jama, Director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing, and then open up for public comment. Because the mayor will not be here next week, we plan on holding over the second reading till at least 2 weeks from now. So without any further comments, I will turn it over to Constantine.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Constantine Severe. I am the IPR director. I have had the honor of being an employee of the city at IPR for the last 5 years. I've had the opportunity to get to know community members and to hear their passion for real police oversight in the city, and to get also know and actually get to know very well some police officers. And you know, we have a city that has accomplished a lot in the last 30 years. I'm just hearing the land use issue before us. I'm kind of a land use nerd myself, and it's amazing to see how much progress that the city of Portland has made in the last 30 years and 40 years. When you look at the changes that we've made in police oversight, I think we've made some dramatic changes as well. But at the same time, when you look at the police bureau line officers, the men and women of police who protect us, who are responsible for Portland having one of the lowest crime rates of a city this size, a city that's had two officer-involved shootings this year, which is a pretty low rate. Last year we had six, and it's amazing the quality of individuals who work for the city, and unfortunately I don't think our oversight system does the officers or the community justice in what it does. We have a system that the Department of Justice felt compelled to look at, that the police commissioner at the time and the mayor asked for a Department of Justice investigation into how Portland conducted itself in the use of force with the African-American community and folks with mental health issues. The Department of Justice also looked at what other parts of our system were at fault. And my presentation to you folks will kind of lay out where we've come from, where we are, and where we can be, because I don't think there is anything that the collective wisdom of the 585,000 people who live in this city cannot accomplish. I think we are a great city. I think we are the best city in this world, and I think we can have an oversight system that is worthy of the community. So with that, I will start. So the Independent Police Review Division is a part of the City Auditor's Office. It was created in 2001. It is the successor agency to PIAC, which was back in those days under Mayor Vera Katz's office. We have 12 employees. IPR's reason for existence is really well laid out in 321.010. It establishes that the independent and impartial office, readily available to the public, responsible to the city auditor, empowered to act on complaints against police bureau personnel for alleged misconduct, and recommend appropriate changes of police bureau policies and procedures towards the goals of safeguarding the rights of persons and of promoting higher standards of competency, efficiency, and justice in the provision of community policing services. I believe that statement is why we're all here today. I think compared to where the city was in 2001, we've made huge steps forward. I don't think we're there yet. I think we can get there. A little look at what the administrative investigation process looks like, and this is a simplified version of that. There's the intake portion where whether it's a bureau-initiated case or a community member-initiated case, whether it starts at IPR or at the police bureau at Internal Affairs, there's intake stage, there's an investigation, there's the recommended findings by the officer's commander. If the case merits it, it goes to the police review board. There's also the possibility of a CRC appeal if the community member or the involved officer is not satisfied with the outcome of the case. There's the chief proposed discipline if there is discipline in that case, if the officer is found out of policy. And then there's the chief's police commissioner's final discipline. And in Portland's unique system of commissioner form of government, since we're a day after the 100th anniversary of that, even though the Portland Police Bureau is a part of the city, the police chief answers to the police commissioner, and so it's the same way. So if IPR does an independent investigation, we plug that into the investigation portion of the administrative investigation part of the administrative investigation. IPR does not do findings. We review investigations, and we review the recommended findings by the officer's commander. If we do not agree with the officer's commander's recommended findings, we can kick it to the police review board for the 5 voting members in normal cases and 7 members in use of force cases to have that discussion and provide a recommended finding and or discipline to the chief and to the police commissioner ultimately. All findings, discipline, until it gets to the police commissioner, are all recommendations. The original IPR ordinance was in 2001, and this is basically kind of bare bones what IPR was at that time. IPR was seen as more of a triage type of a shop where community members could come with complaints, and if it needed to be a real investigation, quote-unquote, IPR would forward that to the police bureau, to Internal Affairs, for them to do the full investigation. So community members filed their complaints at IPR. CRC was created at that time. Professionalized staff, PIAC at that prior to IPR only had 1 staff person. I think when IPR was originally created, we had 5 staff members. Today we're at 12, so you've seen that growth there. We had the authority to monitor internal affairs investigations and initiate independent investigations. So we've had the authority to initiate independent investigations since the beginning of IPR history until the review we did in the Fresh Hour case. That was the first time we'd ever done any type of independent investigation review. A lot of that was a lack of resources. The second part of that is the conflicting nature of our authorizing code, and I'll go into that a little bit later. Another authority that IPR has always had is to hire outside consultants to review officer-involved shootings and custody deaths. You folks probably recognize the PARC reports. There were several PARC reports and follow-up reports, and most recently the Office of Independent Review, or OIR, reports. In 2010, as auditor mentioned, there was a new ordinance that expanded IPR's powers and duties. We were able to open complaints at our own discretion. We gained the authority to approve investigations and findings. And it didn't really matter what the case was. Before, there was a little bit more ambiguity about what cases we actually had authority to approve or not approve. The ability to controvert a commander's case, finding to the police review board in all cases. IPR was given subpoena power, which council decided to delegate its charter subpoena power to us. That does not apply to PPB members. That is something that's spelled out in the code, that we subpoena documents, papers, and or individuals that we need to talk to. IPR has used that power selectively. We've used it a few times in the last year. One of the big creations of the IPR reform ordinance of 2010 was the creation of the Police Review Board. It combined a former Performance Review Board and the Use of Force Review Board. It required that the board be facilitated by a professional facilitator who is not employed by the Bureau. IPR became a voting member of the Police Review Board. Previously, we had been an advisory member. Citizen members became became members of the board through an appoint or recommendation by the city. By a recommendation of the auditor and a appointment process by city council. And the PRB was required to issue a public report at least twice a year. A little bit more to the current day, the Department of Justice settlement agreement. It ended a 15-month investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice. That it attempted to determine whether there were systemic violations of the U.S. Constitution or federal laws by PPD officers. It was motivated by a significant increase in police shooting of individuals, the majority of which involved community members with mental health issues. The DOJ's findings letter is, to be blunt, pretty scathing at the city. I think one of the practices that we've gotten into is laying the faults in our oversight system on the police bureau. This is something that we all own as either citizens of the city or city officials. The agreement between the Department of Justice is between the Department of Justice and the city of Portland. This is our responsibility to fix. It was our fault that the Department of Justice had to come in and look at our issues. DOJ wrote that a lack of timeliness in Portland's accountability system undercut its effectiveness and community faith in the process, said that Portland had a self-defeating accountability system. The settlement agreement was approved by by City Council on November 14th, 2012, called for a lot of changes to how we do business in the city of Portland. Including the use of force policy, training, crisis intervention program, and officer accountability system. What we're talking about right now with this particular ordinance and these code changes is only about the officer accountability portion of the DOJ agreement, which is Section 8 of the DOJ agreement. The agreement is between the United States Department of Justice and the City of Portland. There has been recently a collaborative agreement with the Albina Ministerial Alliance. Important lessons learned from the DOJ's experience. Portland, we have a really big city government, and a lot of times people really feel comfortable in their silos. I think, hopefully, that the DOJ agreement has kind of destroyed our silo bunker mentality. There really isn't a PPB or IPR or BHR investigation of officer misconduct. There is the city's administrative investigation into these cases. If we don't all succeed together, none of us succeed. What does the DOJ settlement agreement require? It requires that the city do administrative investigations in 180 days, that IPR have the ability to conduct meaningful, independent investigations. Investigations of excessive force will be subject to full and complete investigations unless there's clear and convincing evidence that the allegation has no basis in fact. The CRC will be expanded to 11 members, that there is a rotating pool of CRC members who will serve on the police review board, and that the city will implement a discipline guideline.
Sorry, let me just stop you there for a
second. Yes, sir.
You're able to crosswalk each of those provisions to a specific part of the DOJ.
Crosswalk, I will, sir.
Okay, good.
So post-DOJ, through council support, IPR has been able to have 5 full-time investigators, and that has been much appreciated. Historically, for the last few years, we had 2.5 investigators. With 400 complaints on an average year, we really were at the treading water stage, and I don't think we were able to effectively serve this community with 5 full-time investigators, 3 of whom have extensive experience with mental health, folks with mental health issues. One of them is a former Portland Police Bureau sergeant and actually was the first female sergeant at the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, and one of our investigators is a former criminal defense investigator. So we have a really diverse, smart, capable, proactive investigative core. So it's one of the reasons why I'm here and one of the reasons why I have the passion about what I'm talking about is it's important for us to be able to serve the city. Every one of us who works for IPR believes strongly in what we're doing. We left other jobs that we cared about, but we all have a dedication and a burning passion to serve the city and to do what we need to do to make sure that we have an accountability system that we can look at our friends and neighbors who, myself, I live in the city, and I want to be able to look at my next-door neighbor who knows what I do and say, you know what, I'm making this accountability system better as opposed to drawing a paycheck. So IPR and IA have worked together on the timelines for every part of the administrative investigations covered by the Department of Justice agreement. The work, a lot of this work has actually been done by Internal Affairs and the Professional Standards Division, led by Captain Dave Famous, who is an extraordinary leader in the Police Bureau, who without Captain Famous, I don't think we would be as far as we are right now in trying to implement the Department of Justice settlement agreement. I think he shares IPR's sense of urgency about these changes that we need to make. We may or may not have differences of opinions on two specifics, but I really respect the work that he's done, and it's important that everybody understands that the ability, particularly for IPR, to talk directly to officers is not about Internal Affairs not able to being able to do the job. Internal Affairs, day in, day out, they do a really good job. They brought down their timelines to do investigations pretty good. They have increased resources, from what I understand, and every one of their investigators, who I know fairly well, are tens. The issue for us at IPR is that the city code requires us to have the ability to do independent investigations. There are cases where we need to do independent investigations, but we have inside the city code contradictory parts of the city code that I think create confusion about what we're able to do. And I think our system works best when we have a checks and balances. And right now, I don't think we have that in full effect. So that's where we're trying to get this accountability system to. Part of IPR's post-DOJ actions is expanding what we do on initial investigations that it's pretty clear that we have the authority to do right now. So we're transcribing all witness interviews and that end up being full investigations so we can prevent subsequent redundant interviews, which is part of the DOJ's mandate. So why are we doing this right now? You know, there's several premises that I have that, you know, the city is serious about implementing the Department of Justice settlement agreement, that even though it's been a year since implementation, that we still have that sense of urgency and that we cannot backslide to the past. We have to increase the consistency and objectivity of our system. That is something that prior audits, the Park Report, OIR reports talk about at length. We need to increase the transparency. I think it's great that we have an independent police review division. I think it's great we have a professional standards division. But unless members of the public have access to information that is in a readable format and that they can access themselves while maintaining the confidentiality of the system, I don't think we're really getting to where we need to. And we also have to make sure that it's usable. So our strategy is to implement the changes of the DOJ settlement agreement that are the most urgent. So that's reflected in the current code changes. There are several things that are particularly CRC related that we've decided to hold off until the agreement's much closer to being in an implementation, particularly the limitation that the CRC would only have 21 days to hear an appeal. I think that's going to be a significant burden on the CRC, frankly, and I think it's important for the city staff, whether it's Internal Affairs, IPR, the chain of command at the Portland Police Bureau. I think it's important for us to get our act together before we put such an imposition on community members, because currently right now CRC takes about an average of about 100 days to do an appeal. So we're gonna shrink that down from about 100 something days to 21 days. And that is something that's in the agreement and that we will try to work with the CRC in making sure that we implement that. But I don't think it's fair for us to do that right now.
Is that 21 business days?
Calendars.
Calendar days.
Calendar days. So to do the crosswalk, so independent investigations. So this, on the left will be the DOJ settlement agreement terms, and on the right is what IPR's proposed code changes reflect. So on the left, for independent investigations, the city will enable meaningful independent investigation by IPR when IPR determines such investigation is necessary. So Section 321070 big P provides with IPR with the ability to compel Bureau employees to attend interviews, cooperate, and answer questions during an administrative investigation. 321.120 clarifies IPR's ability to conduct an independent investigation. 321.020 expands the jurisdiction to include civilian supervisors of sworn PPB employees. And 321.150B5 requires notification from PPB prior to termination by Bureau of Investigation that has not been assigned for recommended findings. So basically cases that are terminated, at least in our opinion, prematurely or early, we just have to receive notification of that. And these are a package because we are not able to do a meaningful investigation if we don't know that the Bureau, for whatever reason, has terminated an investigation early. If we are unable to have the ability to investigate cases that involve supervisors of sworn PBB employees. We've had a recent case where there was an investigation of a supervisor of sworn employees where IPR did not have that jurisdiction, so we had to cobble together a solution to that. And I think as a city or as an organization, when we try to do these kind of on-the-fly type of ad hoc types of investigations, I don't think that's a recipe for success. So we're trying to learn from that. And fundamentally, we have to have the ability to talk directly to officers at basically two phases. Right now, IPR dismisses, I believe, 75% of the cases that we receive. That is one of the things that the Department of Justice, when they came into town and subsequent to the settlement agreement, has talked to us about, and that they want IPR to gather information, as much information as it can, as early in the process as it can. And part of that requires talking to all the parties to an incident. IPR has the ability to dismiss cases if we feel that there's no misconduct or we can't prove misconduct, but the DOJ felt uncomfortable with IPR making qualitative judgments about some of these cases, if we're just relying, particularly since we talk to the community member, we gather videotape or other dispatch records or that kind of thing, but we rely, at least on officers' part, rely on police reports or dispatch records, and they just felt that was kind of an uneven balance. The other part of it is when IPR has to do an independent investigation. We've done one this year, and Internal Affairs was the liaison at PERSIT, as it's stated in city code. I think when the situation does arise where IPR does have to do an independent investigation, having a police bureau liaison, I think creates a weird dynamic that, because unless, I mean, usually it has to be a pretty significant case for IPR to be able to do the independent investigation. Every case that we've thought about doing an independent investigation, it was just pretty awkward all the way around. So to have a police bureau person stuck in the middle of that, I think is bad policy, and I think is not something that's sustainable over the long term. And this is relatively lengthy, but it's important to read because the current direction in city code of what IPR is supposed to do when we do an independent investigation is a prime example of why we need to change the code and why the Department of Justice called our accountability system self-defeating. So here I go. When a collective bargaining agreement is applicable, and this is talking about when we're trying to talk to an officer, when a collective bargaining agreement is applicable and specifies that a membership may only be interviewed by a police officer, the director shall notify the IAD commander that IPR has undertaken an investigation and the reason. The IPR commander shall appoint a liaison investigator from that office within 2 working days to arrange and participate in interviews. When members represented by a collective bargaining unit are being interviewed by IPR personnel, the IAD investigator may repeat the question and or direct the member to answer the question. That's kind of the first prong. Second, when a collective bargaining agreement is not applicable and does not specify that a member may only be interviewed by a police officer, then the director shall ask the member the question directly and or direct the member to answer the question. I have reviewed several collective bargaining agreements between PPA, PPCOA. I have not seen one that says IPR has to, a PPA member or PPCOA member may only be interviewed by a police officer. That provision does not exist. I've never seen it. I don't know if it was in the 2001 version of the collective bargaining agreements. So that leads us to a point where, at least to my reading, and I believe the city attorney's office agrees with me, we're in proposition number 2. So when a collective bargaining agreement is not applicable and does not specify that a member may only be interviewed by a police officer, then the director shall ask the member the question directly and or direct the member to answer the question. So we have, within our city code right now, a conflict. And we've been conservative in our attempts of exercising our authority to do independent investigation. So we've just gone on the assumption of the first prong that I read. I think kind of a longer term, particularly in the light of the Department of Justice settlement agreement, I just don't think that's workable because there isn't a collective bargaining agreement that's applicable at this point. So current language, contradictory. Creates ambiguity that's a potential risk to city if an IPR investigation leads to discipline and a subsequent grievance. It doesn't meet the Department of Justice settlement agreement and undercuts, most importantly, the city's charter right to have divisions within the city investigate possible employee misconduct through the use of compelled interviews. Here is proposed 321.220. IPR shall have the authority to compel a bureau employee to attend interviews, cooperate, and answer questions during an administrative investigation of a member. If an employee refuses to attend an investigative interview after being notified to do so by IPR or refuses to answer a question or questions asked by IPR during an investigative interview, the employee may be subject to discipline or discharge by the police chief or police commissioner following a separate administrative investigation regarding the employee's refusal to attend the investigative interview or refusal to answer the question or questions during the interview. I think fundamentally it's important for counsel to speak clearly about what counsel wants IPR to do during these independent investigations. Does counsel want IPR to follow the DOJ mandate and for us to be able to do truly independent investigations that are meaningful? All IPR interviews of Bureau employees shall be conducted in conformance with legal and collective bargaining provisions. And prior to being interviewed, a Bureau employee will be notified of the time, date, location of the interview, informed of the right to bring a union representative to the interview, read a statement that informs the employee that they have a duty to cooperate during the interview, must answer all questions truthfully, and that failure to cooperate or engaging in untruthful behavior will be cause for a separate administrative investigation that may result in discipline or discharge imposed by the police chief or police commissioner. And I think that last part is really important. IPR, we are not disciplinarians. That is the responsibility of the police commissioner or the police chief. We are fact gatherers. We are part of this system where it is ultimately up to the police chief or the police commissioner to make a decision how they deal with these cases. But we want to be able to do the best job by the city that we can, get all the information that we need, talk to all the people that we have to. Current investigative practice. Involved and witness officers are compelled to attend interview by internal affairs. IA investigators are, for the most part, civilian, retired law enforcement. IPR can conduct an investigation jointly with an IA or do an independent investigation with PPB officers compelled by IA. Another part that I haven't really brought up so far is that the Bureau of Human Resources conducts solely or jointly EEO investigations with IPR or IA. And the Bureau of Human Resources, as we all know, is a completely civilianized shop, and they can compel officers and directly question PPB officers. And BHR also does its own findings. So we're currently left in the position of one part of the city that's completely civilianized is able to compel officers. And then the other part that's tasked with doing independent investigations through some Byzantine, and I'm using another Department of Justice word, process, isn't able to talk directly to officers. So that calls a question of whether the city is serious about doing independent investigations or not. As IPR director and who serves a very strong auditor, it's my duty to do my best by the city and just to speak bluntly. And it really is not sustainable, the path that we're on right now. We have these new investigators who are doing scene canvases, are talking to a number of community members. And so when we talk to our complainants, they have this expectation that we have talked to the police officer or we will talk to the police officer. And it's like, well, no, we're going to turn that over to the police bureau, which that is, I believe our system works when we're able to follow the case where it needs to go. And I think the police bureau, internal affairs, they do a great job in their investigations, but there are times when IPR needs to follow that investigation from the beginning to the end. So right now, the city has put IPR in a position of, you guys can talk to the community members, you can gather all the evidence, you can go drive around town, but if you need to talk to a police officer, well, okay, we have to set up this crazy system that the city itself hasn't really figured out. And I mean, that really is self-defeating. That's absurd, frankly. The collective bargaining agreement, as I've mentioned, I reviewed in depth Article 61 and 62 of the labor agreement between city and PPA. In my reading, and I'm only a former criminal defense attorney, so I might not know about these things, I just do not see anything that covers what IPR has to do. I vetted this issue with the city attorney's office back in May, and Mary Beth Baptista, my director, my former director, get used to old habits, vetted this with the city attorney's office as well, and they agreed with us that this was not a mandatory subject of bargaining. The next part of this is the excessive force investigation. So that's in Section 129 of the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement. The city and PPB shall ensure that all investigations of excessive force are subject to full and complete IA investigations, result in findings unless there is clear and convincing evidence to IPR that the allegation has no basis in fact. So we've put that in Proposed 321.110. All allegations of use of excessive force shall be subject to full and complete investigation resulting in findings unless there's clear and convincing evidence to IPR that the allegation has no...
Mr. Director, can I just... let me ask you a question on something you said.
No, go ahead. Yes, sir.
You said that in the prior slide it says you vetted this issue about whether it's a subject of bargaining issue with the city attorney's office. And what my understanding from the materials our office has been furnished is there actually is a healthy disagreement on that question. So do you have a legal opinion from either HR or the legal or the legal department that supports your interpretation?
I mean, I have the email chain that the city attorney's office provided to us when we had these discussions. I didn't ask for a formal legal opinion on that. Yeah.
Well, there's hopefully at some point in this hearing we're going to get some clarity about whether it is or it isn't, because that's a significant issue in terms of moving forward. And I just want to say that this commissioner has now received advice on both sides of that issue. So I'm hoping that we get some clarity, because this is not one we want to do through guesswork, because if it is a mandatory subject of bargaining, then we don't get anywhere if we implement it and it's subject later is subject to a ULP. So I just hope we get some clarity on that question, Mr. Mayor.
I agree.
I think that's a point well taken, and this is one of the reasons why IPR has discussed this with the city attorney's office and BHR while bargaining season was open. So if it is bargainable, then folks need to do what they need to do. But at least from my perspective of being the IPR director and who has a mandate and a council direction of following the DOJ agreement, however we need to get it done, I feel when the DOJ is talking to the city and asks me directly, are we in compliance with Section 128 that says IPR has the ability to conduct meaningful investigations? If they ask me that question right now, I would say no. No. So the 180-day timeline, that's Section 121 of the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement. PPB and the city shall complete all administrative investigations of officer misconduct within 180 days of receipt of a complaint of misconduct or discovery of misconduct by other means. For the purpose of this provision, completion of administrative investigations includes all steps from intake of allegations through approval of recommended findings by the chief, including appeals, if any, to CRC, shall be resolved within 21 days. We've tried to adapt that to 321-230. All administrative investigations shall be completed within 180 days of receipt of complaint or initiation of investigation by either IPR or the Bureau. For the purpose of this section, an investigation is complete when the police chief approves recommended findings, including appeals, if any, to CRC.
Excuse me. Just because I coughed, not because I wanted to interrupt you. Sorry.
If an administrative investigation exceeds 180 calendar days, then the police commissioner shall be provided an explanation as to why the administrative investigation exceeded 180 calendar days. This section should not be construed to prohibit the city from completing an investigation or disciplinary process if investigation is not completed within 180 days.
Where is that language that you just read, that second sentence?
Yes.
In an amendment we're going to offer.
Yeah, that's an amendment you're proposing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We've received significant feedback from the community that I think is well taken, that there's a fear in trying to have this benchmark, which I haven't really heard anybody be against the benchmark itself, but a concern that the 180 days would be kind of a drop-dead point, that the case would have to be dismissed or done away with, and that's not the intention in my reading of the DOJ agreement. It's certainly not the intention in trying to put that in city code. So
may I please see that amendment in writing? Very much a reading learner. I'm also wondering why you didn't break it down further. There's 21 days for the citizen review committee to review it, 30-day period for the applicant to appeal. The appellant to appeal, so why not make it that the IPR investigation has to be done in 129 days, and 30 days for the appeal, then 21 for the CRC?
The hope is that our system won't be as mechanical of, hopefully IPR doesn't take 120 days, but we have administrative timelines from basically the beginning of the case, where IPR, the expectation for our initial investigation, will take 14 days. IA, if they have to do an investigation, is 60 days. CRC, when the DOJ agreement is implemented, they'll have 21 days. The I believe that is something that is best done administratively. Just in the time between November and now, we've come up with several different versions, and we've been able to become much more efficient.
So do you have those administrative rules written down somewhere?
I do. I can forward that to you. I also have it on a thumb drive, which I can provide you a copy of that as well.
I think that might give the community as well as me some certainty or a higher level of comfort knowing what the administrative process is that accompanies this code provision.
But can I go back to the question that Commissioner Fritz has raised? I understand the concerns that we've heard from the community about the 180 days. So we're trying to figure out a way to make sure that if the 180 days is not met, that it doesn't prejudice the opportunity to weigh in and hold police officers accountable. But the way I read this now, it says, consistent with the DOJ settlement, investigations shall be completed within 180 days. We all understand what that means, except where it exceeds 180 days, and you just have to give the police commissioner a written explanation as to why it exceeds 180 days. Is that a fair reading?
Yes. Well, the hope for the 180 days is that it is a benchmark of what the expectation is in over 90% of the cases that they will be under 180 days. If a case goes over 180 days, which we hope it doesn't, but if it does go over 180 days, there has to be an explanation to the chief of police, to the police commissioner, of why it has gone over 180 days.
But if it goes beyond 180 days and it turns out the police commissioner does not accept the explanation, what's the effect on the process?
At least right now, the 180 days does not have there's not a dismissal authority. We're not in compliance. So,
like a statute of limitations?
No. I mean, the thing about the 180 days is, you know, in the Department of Justice settlement agreement, if we do not meet the 180 days, we have to have a work plan, and the DOJ will work with us to try to implement the 180 days in a better way. I think the rationale behind having if we go over the 180 days, having that go to the police commissioner is that kind of the similar format. Whenever the DOJ agreement goes away, I think we still will want to have these timelines. And the police commissioner, since they're in charge of this process, ultimately is the best person that's situated to kind of deal with, you know, people not following through on meeting their timelines.
So if this becomes a chronic problem of not being able to meet the 180-day rule goal, under this, the police commissioner would get notice. But there might be a larger policy question, which is, there's inadequate staff or resources or some structural problem in how we're doing this. How would that come to council?
Well, I mean, if hopefully we will meet 180 days, but for whatever reason if we weren't meeting 180 days, one of the things that IPR has done, and Internal Affairs is actually, or Professional Standards is doing this as well, for at least on IPR's point, we have a timeliness study that we look at all these cases and that we have a draft ready for just the cases before the Department of Justice settlement agreement that we want to present to council as well. I think this is something that needs constant reporting, and this is something that that's what we do basically at our weekly Internal Affairs IPR meetings, is look at these timelines, and we want to provide council with that information and the police commissioner as well.
The Department of Justice settlement agreement says in paragraph 123 that if we're unable to meet the time frame, we provide DOJ a written report of the IA process. So shouldn't that be in the code too?
We can put that as, the issue with putting that in the code is the Department of Justice settlement agreement lasts until 2017. So once the DOJ agreement goes away, I don't think we should have in city code that we're going to report it to the DOJ. So that's why having the police commissioner receive the report is what we put in.
Well, I realize that it's been 3.5 years since we did the previous amendments to this code, and so therefore that would take us to 2017. But I'm anticipating, based on conversations with you, that we're going to be having several packages of, we're going to have a number of packages of implementation strategies coming to council as soon as the settlement is approved and as we work through it.
Yes, ma'am.
So I would prefer to have it in the code for right now, and we can take it out.
Yeah, I'm not averse to that. I think that does make sense, but I that is something that is workable, and we're willing to take suggestions on how to best implement that. So I appreciate your suggestion.
Thank you.
So the DOJ settlement, to my reading, is pretty straight, unambiguous. 180 days is 180 days. So how is what you're proposing at all consistent with the DOJ settlement?
Well, I mean, so our goal is to meet the 180 days. These basically, the second paragraph is an attempt to meet community concerns that we will somehow dismiss complaints if they go over 180
days. Right. No, I understand. Yes. I understand all that. I'm just saying my reading of the DOJ language is pretty clear and unambiguous, and so we're either, you know, we're trying to create wiggle room, is what you're telling us.
I am not trying to create any wiggle room. I believe that we should meet the 180 days. The only purpose of that second paragraph is to provide a sense of comfort to the community that we will not get rid of officer misconduct cases because they go over 180 days. The goal is to meet the 180 days. The Department of Justice settlement agreement, that's, you know, a document between relatively sophisticated parties who are used to these types of situations, these types of negotiations. So when you're having something in city code, I think, you know, initially I went for basically trying to have something that reflected the Department of Justice agreement simply, and just the comments that I've heard from members of the community, and I think they're valid community concerns, and I think there's a way that we can try to meet both, and hopefully in the interim between this meeting and the next council hearing on this issue, that we can have some language that kind of reflect that the 180 days isn't wiggle room to, well, you know, if we kind of do sort of meet the 100 days, that'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I realize there's a lot of heartburn being caused to some people of notion of getting something done when 180 days. And I just think that it says pretty clearly that's what we need to do in the DOJ settlement.
Absolutely.
So, because I know there's heartburn about having the CRC only having 21 days. So, I mean, there's a lot of people who, I guess, a lot of, you know, very vocal opponent, you know, critics of the Bureau, of the city, when it comes to investigating officers, who say, whatever happened to that investigation? You know, mm-hmm. Is it being done by BHR? Is it being done by IAD, IPR?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happens. So I think there's, you know, to counterbalance or maybe in support of getting things done in 180 days is that other concern and frequent criticism we hear is this investigation's taking forever. I've lost track of whatever happened to it. The public loses sight of it in a matter of weeks. So anyway, that's just a comment.
No, I think that's a great point. I think one of the reasons why the 180 days is there is that as the city enacted a lot of different oversight concerns in our oversight process, the cases grew and grew and grew, and with kind of a loss of what the overall, you know, what the goal was in doing oversight and in providing timely accountability. So the 180 days is a way for us to meet that, and we'll be talking to your representatives and hopefully yourselves as well about how we can craft language that works with the DOJ agreement, but at the same time allays some community concerns.
Mr. Shapiro, I just want to clarify. Did you say the Department of Justice settlement sort of contemplates that it's possible that we'd exceed 180 days, and in that case, we're subject to, we have to submit like a compliance plan or something?
Yes.
So even the settlement recognizes that that's a possibility.
Yes.
And you're saying the community concern you're addressing is people are worried that if it goes past 180 days, then the complaint is dismissed.
Yes.
It is sort of a statute of limitations type thing. Right.
And even though that's not the intention of either the DOJ agreement or what this proposed code is.
And I just, expressing my personal opinion, I actually would like to have something in the code that is not tied to the Department of Justice settlement, because I'd hate for us for 2018 to roll around and for us to have forgotten that we need to update the code to reflect the fact that the Department of Justice settlement no longer exists.
It would be delightful if this topic is considered done by then, that people were not watching for that.
Any other questions? Okay. Expansion of the CRC to 11 members, that's section 134 of the DOJ agreement. The city shall expand the membership of the CRC to 11 members, representative of the many and diverse communities in Portland who are neutral, unbiased, and capable of making objective decisions. The quorum of CRC members necessary to act may remain at its existing level. We try to enact that in code in 32180, Citizen Review Committee. The committee shall consist of 11 citizens. 5 members shall constitute a quorum of committee. Decision shall be made by a majority of the committee members present and constituting a quorum. However, adoption or amendment of rules of procedure or protocols requires an affirmative vote of 6 members.
Mr. Director, I appreciate the last sentence there, but can you give us your thinking as to why a quorum is less than a majority of the panel?
Well, that's a good point. Because the CRC members will be serving on a rotating pool on the police review board, there's a concern that, let's say, some members are absent, and then we're hearing a case that went to the police review board where the CRC member would have to excuse themselves and not hear that issue again, that there would not be a quorum if it was just like kind of a normal majority. So that's where that came from.
But we need to be clear, though, if it's a 5-member quorum, other than for adoption or amendment of rules, decisions can be made by 3 votes, a majority of the 5. And so 3 out of 11 can carry the day under this rule?
Right.
A quorum is 5, so as few as 5 people can be present, and then it's a majority of those present. So we're saying that we're comfortable with 3 people serving as decision makers if the quorum is 5.
Particularly in cases of, where sometimes just due to the vagaries of people busy professional lives, we have a difficulty reaching a quorum. I think this is an attempt to meet the issue of if for whatever reason there aren't enough, or there aren't as many CRC members as normally there, that we still are able to conduct business. So I think that's what was intended with this
piece of language. I guess maybe we can come back to this later, but it does seem like we're vesting a significant amount of authority to a very small number of people, and we're saying it's 11 citizens, but if as few as 3 can drive the train, that may not be ultimately what you intended.
Let's see. And this is about CRC members serving on police review board. That's section 131A of the DOJ agreement. Currently, 7 voting members of the PRB review use of force incidents include 2 citizen members. When PRB reviews uses of force cases, one of the 2 citizen member slots shall be drawn from the Citizen Review Committee members. 32180B7, the brackets are inserted language. The committee members shall serve on the police review board when the board reviews use of force cases as defined in Chapter 320. Committee members shall serve on the police review board on a rotating basis for no more than 2 terms of 3 years. Discipline guideline, section 137 DOJ settlement agreement. The city shall develop and implement a discipline guide to ensure that discipline for sustained allegations of misconduct is based on the nature of the allegation and defined consistent mitigating and aggravating factors, and to provide discipline that is reasonably predictable and consistent. 32140B3, the board shall make recommendations as to discipline based on discipline guidelines. The guidelines shall be developed by the Bureau in consultation with IPR. Investigative findings. This particular part deals with the chief providing a rationale to the chief police commissioner when his findings disagree with what the police review board has recommended. And this is based on community feedback, the Portland Police Bureau learning May 12 audit, and just the overall goals of having a fair and consistent disciplinary system, and that particularly in the DOJ agreement in the Section 8 kind of preamble section, that the PPB and the city shall ensure that all investigative findings are supported by a preponderance of the evidence and documented in writing. The reason why I believe this is important is that with the implementation of the discipline guidelines, there will be an objective, consistent criteria. And if the chief, as one of the ultimate decision makers, decides to make a different decision in the police review board, I think that's well within his authority to do that. But as a city where we have multiple fact finders, the officer's commander, the police review board, the chief of police, and then the police commissioner, where when you've looked at some of the arbitration decisions that have come down against the city, they pointed to that in particular where they didn't know where the city was coming from. And I think this will provide that kind of crucial link in those cases where the police chief has a disagreement. And it could be valid, and the chief might have more information than the police review board had. But I think it's really important for us to document that and for us to be, and particularly for the police commissioner to have that in the file in a concise written manner.
Mr. Sevier?
Yes, sir.
When you say in the file, would that be public?
No, you know, as with all disciplinary cases, they are confidential. If let's say the press made a public request for that, you know, the district attorney would have to make that determination. If it was a case of significant public interest, then then it might be made public. But the majority of disciplinary cases do not meet that level, so they are not public. And this is not something that's anticipated where the police commissioner would be releasing this. And it'd go from the police from the police chief to the police commissioner.
So before you just move on from that, I'm not seeing the public records section in 321.090 in my documents of the code. So where is that?
I'm sorry?
What's your question? I'm sorry.
Where, the title of this is 21.090. Oh, it's 080, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on the CRC. Okay, sorry, keep going.
Okay, sure. So public reports. This is something, as I mentioned earlier, was created with the creation of the Police Review Board. Based on community feedback, the members of the community really appreciate having the public reports. I think the Police Bureau has done a really good job in providing the Police Review Board public reports in a timely manner, and they've been pretty well written. But there was a consistent desire for a more consistent format from case to case.
So excuse me again. I had a chance to look. 090 is powers and duties of the CRC.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's 320. I'm sorry.
20.
Okay,
320.
I know you've already gone on, but I'm still...
No. It's important that we're all on the same page.
Literally
and figuratively. It's 320.140. I apologize.
So I had another question on the CRC. And by the way, folks, I know you're all waiting to testify, but I want to get these issues out so that you can comment, and maybe some of the concerns that I've read on email might be already taken care of. Back to the powers and duties of the committee. Why do we not have in an amendment in accordance with paragraph 135 of the settlement agreement that the CRC may find the outcome of an administrative investigation is unreasonable if the CRC finds the findings are not supported by the evidence?
I mean, that's just a restatement of current city code.
And where is that?
It's in the findings section of what supported by the evidence is. It's in...
Where in the code is it?
That is... Supported by the evidence, that is page 3 of chapter 321. So that would be S. So 321.020 in the definition section, S.
So that's actually a little different from what is the language in the settlement agreement. Supported by the evidence then goes back to the reasonable person rather than the supported by the evidence, which I think is different from what's in the settlement agreement.
The DOJ settlement agreement was an attempt to restate what we do as a city. I mean, I would feel very hesitant to change what is actually written in code, and like to have two conflicting portions of the city code. We have a definition section of what supported by the evidence means. So that would mean that we're changing it.
Evidently, another point which we need some more discussion, because I think the way it's written in the DOJ settlement doesn't really mean the same thing as what we have in code.
I think that was an attempt by people who aren't familiar with our system to, you know, reflect what our system is. And I think sometimes you lose the nuance when you restate something. And, you know, supported by the evidence as listed in S has a particular meaning. And, you know, there's basically kind of a body of precedent that people have been following, you know, in the 11 years of IPR, CRC history. So I'd be very nervous about changing that definition to match something that's a temporary agreement that was only attempting to restate what our standard is.